Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 70 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick, Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week when we probably will be just listening to some boring elevator music is DJ Valentine. Welcome back. Dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum.
Girl from Ipanema has got to be playing that elevator. Girl from Ipanema, let's play that right there. That'd be fine.
Well, I got to tell you, when we talk about that, it reminds me of Hans, you know, in the elevator whistling or humming.
Nice suit.
Exactly. John Phillips.
John Phillips, London. I hear F advice is there. Yeah, yes. Good old Hansi.
Exactly. So minute 70 begins with John starting to get a little bit uncomfortable and ends with John being covered with brains.
Is this, let me ask you a question. Again, in a bubble, you pick up stuff. Is this the only elevator sequence in the movie?
This is the only elevator sequence in the movie.
Think about that, folks. Think about, because every Die Hard movie, all three of them, has to have an elevator sequence. This is the only elevator sequence in Die Hard with a Vengeance. Die Hard is paramount. Elevators are paramount to the.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He doesn't. But John always has to leave the elevator through the top. This is the one time he doesn't do that.
He doesn't do that, but at least it's an elevator. There's an elevator something.
Yes.
Imagine there was no elevator whatsoever. That would make it weird. That would make it Good Day to Die Hard or something. You got to have an elevator sequence, and there's an elevator sequence in this movie, which is fantastic. And it may be, as I'll get to, maybe one of the
sequences. Maybe. It's actually interesting. I last week when Lisa was on, we came across another common thread between the Die Hard trilogy. They mentioned the idea of a wild goose chase. And that phrase is used in all three movies.
Is it I got a bad feeling about this, but for Die Hard, I got a bad feeling about this. It's said in every Star Wars anything. So, yeah.
Yeah, it could be I've got a bad feeling about this. It could be I'm too old for the show. You know, there's a lot of different theories.
Yippee-ki-yay said in all of them. This is why I was pissed at the fourth one, because they censor it in the fourth one, which I freaking detest, because it's the...
Well, at least you're willing to acknowledge the fact that there is a fourth one.
Trust me, it's begrudgingly. It's begrudgingly.
Okay.
It's very. Here, I'll give it this. I'll give it this for Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is kind of a criticism. It's the most awkward version of it, which because it's like he shoots the thing because he says say hello to your brother. We're spoiling something that comes weeks from now, but and then he says yippee-ki-yay, but it's like it's weird. He should have said it differently. He should have said it in a different scene, I'd say. But yeah, it's more awkward than when he says it in Die Hard 1 and Die Hard 2,
right?
Even in Live Free and Dumb Hard, and I don't even remember when he says it in Good. I don't. That movie's a fever dream. I don't even remember what happens in that. I think Cole Hauser's in it for at one point. That's all I remember.
it's a good question. Hey, I don't know. I don't even know who's in it. And I don't know what I'm going to do when I get there in four seasons. But
Jai Courtney's in it.
Thankfully, I have
Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in it. Yeah. It's a train wreck. Without a train wreck.
Unfortunately, there's no trains that get wrecked. Yes.
No. Anyway, elevator. Good. So yes, this is the only elevator scene in this movie, which is I just realized that right now. I didn't even think of that.
That's right. And we also get the entire minute takes place in this elevator. You know, if you want to talk about in a bubble, this is in an elevator. You know,
yes.
They don't give it any other location in this entire minute, which is good. It's nice the way that they keep it focused with what they're doing here.
Right.
And I mean, first of all, they give us about 20 seconds, which is a huge chunk where nothing is really happening besides John just looking around and, you know, he like smiles at the, you know, the various Nazi guys all around, you know, these guys all fit the bill for what they do. We can see that he's very suspicious, but he looks at Gunther and smiles at him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like he looks around, he looks and sees Otto's badge, you know, which I think that's a great screenwriting idea, you know, to have him take Ricky's badge, you know, 2 weeks ago as a souvenir, as a souvenir, and just, you know, hooking it in his breast pocket of the jacket, you know, like you don't even think about that beforehand. And the fact that John is somewhat paying attention here is just great. You know, like he looks over and sees the number, but it's very difficult to see it. So then he looks into the mirror and happens to notice the number. Which is also great.
Right, you get that, and you get the callback to the story Walsh told, and then get the last clue, which is
it's Walsh's number.
That's not the. To me, it's not the last clue. That's the definitive clue. That's when he knows. But then he does another thing.
Well, I think his line here is to stall.
Right, but even when the stall tactic is another clue, because he has the security guards in there, but that guy who doesn't speak Otto, he's supposed to be playing a New York City detective, right?
Right.
And it's been set up earlier that 95 to 100% of the New York City detectives play their badge numbers in the lottery.
That's right.
So when he says, did anybody play the lottery last night? And Otto doesn't say a word. He knows, okay, this guy definitely ain't a cop. That's another clue that he's not a cop, because he was like, yeah. If he was a cop, he would have been playing his badge number.
That's right. That's true.
So yeah, I like that a little bit. But that the stall tactic, which is half a stall and half a reason for him to get the drop on reaching for his gun before everybody else. Because if he just started reaching in his pocket, they would have probably
because he wants to also show them that okay, everything is hunky dory, everything's
right. Because if he reaches in his shirt pocket, they pull on him. But because he's telling a story about, oh, I got my tickets right here, so he can reach into his pocket, and they hesitate a little bit because he's telling a story and he's and that's what gets him the drop. Also,
That's right. So John recognizes the number, and he then, you know, looks around at the guys around him. You know, he, at this point, as you said, he knows something is off here. He recognizes that it's that it is Ricky's badge, and you got to give him credit for the fact that he doesn't get emotional about it at all. No. You know, he's just thinking only with his head. He's not thinking with his heart, which is what you need in this type of situation. And then he turns around and goes, "Hey, what was the lottery number last night? Huh? And any of you guys play the lottery?" And like I love how he looks around to each of them as he's saying it.
No, he's sizing them up, knowing where everybody is.
That's right. He's doing what RoboCop does, you know, just testing. Okay, where he's is doing every? What RoboCop does.
I love it.
It doesn't look that way.
I'm picturing RoboCop in this scene. Go ahead. It's a completely different scene, but whatever.
No, we see the beep 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 of beep, all the beep, targets. Beep, beep, beep. There you go.
Anybody play their lottery numbers last night? You.
Exactly. And you know, John looks around at all of them, trying to throw them off balance also as he's doing it. And you know, a few of them actually shake their heads no. You know, like you know, that they apparently aren't in on this whole idea or this joke of what goes on in the NYPD blue, you know. And then John just continues with his story, and he goes, "My wife buys me two tickets every week. For the last 10 years, plays the same two numbers all the time. I say, honey, why don't you play a different number?" And I love how he does this in a voice. Now, I mean, we mentioned earlier this week. Exactly. We mentioned earlier this week about the last Boy Scout. He does that there also. You know, there's a scene where he's pretending, you know, he does something very similar to what he's doing here. But he goes, "Honey, why don't you play a different number?" And she goes, "Well, those are my lucky numbers." And then he says it really, really well and fast as he, you know, uses his hand as a diversion, you know, by slipping his hand into his shirt, basically, because he's not wearing a jacket. And he goes, "I got the tickets right here." And within a fraction of a second, he just does it so well. He shoots Carl. And then you know, the within another second he shoots the huge guy. What did we say his name was? Kurt. He shoots
Oh,
Kurt.
Kirk. Yeah.
He takes that 6'10" guy down really, really quickly. You know, and the rest of the battle that lasts through the rest of the 20 seconds that are left of this minute is just great, because it's the type of thing that this is made for a movies by minute type of dissection, because, you know, if you're watching this regular, you don't pay attention to exactly what's going on. I mean, even before I did the research here, I knew that he kills all four guys in the elevator, spoiler alert, but right. You know, you don't see the shots. You don't see, I mean, Carl gets shot in the stomach. It's pretty amazing that John actually kills him that way, you know, and right. Same thing with Kurt, you know, the two of them are shot at stomach level and the two of them just fall to the ground dead, you know, which you got to give John a lot of credit for that. And then he starts fighting with the two guys that are left. So he's pushing against Daisy Fuentes' husband.
I'll never get over that.
he's using his back to push him back, and at the same time he has his gun in Otto's head. You know, at Otto,
in a,
Otto's
he's head. In a Russian standoff with Otto right now, because Otto has him dead to rights and he has Otto dead to rights, which makes Otto hesitate.
Correct.
Because Otto could just shoot. This is where I said John. This is the most perilous scene he's in. He should be dead here. Because if Otto did,
no, he's short. That's why he lives.
But no, Otto has the gun under John McClane's armpit.
That's so
if
right.
He pulls the gun, John is dead. It goes right through his heart. He's gone. Only reason he doesn't pull the trigger yet, because he pulls it later, is John has a gun to his neck. So they're in a Russian standoff essentially. But if Otto, one of those bouted guys, he could have said, "Screw it, I'm just gonna die. I'll take you with me." And John's dead. There's nothing stopping him from shooting him. If he right. shoots John, John shoots him and he dies. But John also dies. But the fact that Otto wants to live at that moment, he doesn't pull the trigger yet. So John has the time to take out the guy, Daisy Fuentes' husband. Unbelievable.
Well, my question is how does he kill Mike / Gunther? Or because he just headbutts him.
He shoots through his shirt at one.
He doesn't,
headbutts, but I think
John's gun. John has his gun on Otto.
There's a part where he slides Otto's gun to the right, and maybe Otto accidentally shoots Gunther because Gunther's on the ground at that point. And then you can see John push his arm, the gun from under his armpit that Otto's holding, to the side, and Otto just unloads. So maybe he kills Gunther. He might knock Gunther out, but then Otto finishes the job. That right. could be what happens there. It's very claustrophobic. And do you know what this scene was stole? Or what? Not say what movie stole this scene. What movie?
Could it be puts an ode to this scene? Something with Captain America, maybe.
Something with Captain America. Yeah, and in that movie, they do very much the exact same beats where Captain notices something's up. He sees the sweat on the guy's neck, and then he says a line and then he goes to work. But in that movie, the elevator is like 15 million times the size for some reason.
Because they're in a tight elevator. Also in glass. It's enclosed in glass, meaning you can see from the outside.
Well, that too, but you lose all the claustrophobia of that fight compared to this one, because one, you can see outside, like you're saying, with the glass. And two, it's way bigger because he's throwing people up and you don't have the room. And this one was more of an elevator fight because he's so pushed. The Mexican stand, or Mexican, Russian, whatever you want to call it, the standoff he's having with Otto, where he's pushing Daisy Fuentes' husband back. He's barely got enough room to put a gun to him, where Otto's bent overhead. It's way more claustrophobic and perilous than the Captain America one. It seems like they're running inside of the elevator. The elevator seems way bigger than it's supposed to be. It's going to be way more claustrophobic.
Well, because you need elevator. The elevator needs to be big enough to put a big round shield in.
Shield. But even to his credit, he doesn't use the shield really. It's on the ground at that point. But there's the fact that he throws a guy up in the air, and another guy like runs forward. I'm like, you wouldn't be running forward. It'd be like if they tackle you, Captain would have to like... And again, we're crapping on the Captain America Winter Soldier elevator scene, which is excellent, by the way. I'm just saying in a realistic...
I'm not crapping on it, but John McClane is more of a realistic character than Captain America. That's when it comes out. Yeah.
With the room. Captain America seems to have, the way they shot it, way more room than he should. Where John, they shoot it in a way where you feel how tight it is in there.
That's
especially
right.
How it ends. After Otto's gun is pushed away from him and he unloads, John finishes the job essentially.
That's right. I mean, basically Gunther, right before he dies, so we hear four shots ring out, and you know, I think you're right. I think in the end it's Otto who kills Gunther, not John, even though John had already headbutted him numerous times.
So he knocked him down and then he slides.
Is it possible that he, you know, going back to the Last Boy Scout, is it possible that he hit him hard enough, with a headbutt,
with his nose up into
the brain? Exactly.
I mean, because he slams his head backwards. If he slammed his head up, I could see it. But because he slammed his head backwards, I think he knocks him down and then uses Otto to kill him. I think because he's guiding his arm. He's guiding Otto's arm.
Right.
It seems like he's guiding it away from him, downward to the left. That sounds like JFK.
Yes.
Down and to the left. I think he's guiding Otto to shoot Gunther to finish the job, and then he finishes Gunther. And you know it's claustrophobic because John can't even move away from he can't even get enough room to avoid spraying brains all over his face.
That's
essentially
right.
When he kills Otto.
That's right. But I do like the fact that John knows that this guy had something to do with somehow getting Walsh's badge. He doesn't know for sure that Walsh is dead, but he knows that. So, you know, he just executes him. You know,
John was killing everybody. Here's one thing you know about John McClane. When push comes to shove, he's not arresting anybody. Hey, John don't carry cuffs. He's killing everybody.
That's true.
They're going to die. We'll you're going to see in a couple of weeks, maybe a week or so, when he's dealing with somebody in a dump truck. He's not trying to arrest that person. And that guy had nothing to do with Walsh, and he still executes. So, yeah, John doesn't have cuffs with him.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's true.
There are rules for policemen. That's what my captain keeps telling me.
But again, the question is, you know, here we see John basically executing Otto. Do you think that at part of him is doing it because he knows that that Otto had something to do with Walsh's disappearance?
I think that whole fight is instinctual. I don't think he has the time to enact vengeance. I think he's probably happy he did it, but I think at that point he's just trying to live. Mm-hmm. That's not like I'm gonna take my time and kill you. He's like, yo, I gotta kill this guy first. I gotta kill this guy. I gotta kill these guys or I'm dead.
Right.
I don't think he has the time to savor is not the right word, but at least to I'm gonna shoot you worst because you killed my friend. I think it was more like, I got to kill these guys to get out of this elevator alive. Because even, I mean, we're not going to see it in this minute, but he like stumbles out of there barely alive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would like to think afterwards when he takes a breath, he appreciates what he's done in terms of, at least I've avenged my friend. But I think at that moment, he's just like, I got to kill this guy.
That's right.
It's the quickest way to kill this guy because he's still got a gun on him. I don't know what the hell's going on. He's way bigger than me. I got to kill this guy immediately. I got to stop him.
Right.
So that's it.
Right. One of the great things is that when he's fighting with Otto, and again, we know that Otto himself does not speak English, but he screams at Otto and goes, put the gun down, put the gun down now. And he just put it down. You know, as they're arguing, you know, as they're fighting here inside of the, you know, inside of the elevator. And then again, John just gets him in and just shoots him. And the effects are great because we do see it gives us the impression of the fact that they are in a very claustrophobic area because, right. You know, the brain just splatter onto him. I mean, you could tell it's not just blood. There is brain matter.
There's chunks in there.
There's chunks.
There's chunks.
That's right. There are definitely chunks in there.
It's very well, comparing it to both elevator scenes, the Captain America and this one. I just want to know, I like both of them. It's just in terms of realism, this is the realistic one to me. Captain America one's good, and it's the only way you could have put Cap in a situation where he'd have trouble with regular human beings. So they say, we'll put him in an elevator, so it's claustrophobic. But if you would have shot that Captain America one way more claustrophobic, I think Cap has more problems. You have to give Cap that room to do some of the stuff he's doing, because he's doing a lot of acrobatics and stuff. It's like, you can't do that in an elevator the size of the one Johnson. You're gonna be hitting your head and kicking. Your foot's gonna be sticking on the top of it.
Does Cap kill everyone in there, or
I don't think he kills the person. He knocks them all out, because a lot of those guys back later. So he knocks. I mean, technically, if Cap really wants to, if he punches you hard enough, you are dead. But sure. He does. I don't think he kills them. I think he incapacitates most of them. They're probably not going to be happy for the rest of their life. But they're alive. John's murdering everybody, because John does mathematics really fast. I kill this person or I'm dead. I have to arrest this person. If I even hesitate, I'm going to die. And in this scene, again, of course, all the stuff John does in this movie, this scene to me is where I'm like, John should have died here. Because when that shot makes me cringe a little bit is when Otto has that gun against his under his arm. I'm like, John, you're dead. He can feel you have a gun to his head, but John, you're in a very tense situation. Fighting a guy, you're moving around. The fact that he could just pull the trigger at any moment and end your life, it's more perilous than the bombs going off. You should have been dead immediately. So yeah, I think in terms of elevator fights, this one is the most visceral one. They're both good. This is the visceral one.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And that's how this minute ends, with brains being splattered around. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
Die Hard with a Vengeance is... I like Die Hard 2. Die Hard with a Vengeance, it's just when McTiernan came back, it just had that feel. It felt like the first one to me. Die Hard 2 felt like John McClane in a different movie for me. This one, even though the script wasn't even meant to be what it was meant to be, but it just felt like a actual successor to the first one. This to me feels like a Die Hard 2. Right. Then Die Hard 2 feels like a Die Hard 2. So yeah. Right. Love the movie.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's get into the script a little bit. The script also is it's slightly different of what happens. I mean, we talked yesterday about the fact that they mentioned to John that he should take the lift, that type of thing. So it begins, McClane begins to walk over to the elevator. Something isn't kosher here. Something Nigel just said. McClane stops suddenly, turns, and begins looking around the corridor and lobby. Hey, fellas, I think I know what's bothering me. As McClane walks away from the guards, he reaches inside his jacket and pulls his gun from his shoulder holster. The guards nervously look at each other. They didn't want to kill McClane here, but now they'll have to. McClane then says, in America, you never call. The guards begin to pull their handguns and level them at McClane's back. But McClane spins, diving to the floor, his gun up and firing. In rapid succession, McClane shoots and kills Nigel, Freddy, and the other fake guard. Do you remember the other fake guard's name?
Bert.
Bert, that's right, which they don't mention here. McClane gets up and steps past their corpses. McClane finishes his sentence by saying, in elevators, a lift.
Ah, so it was a clue. We were right.
That's right. Then it says, McClane gets in the elevator and descends. Again, it's fine the way they do it in the script.
It's way better
in the movie. It's so much better here.
Way better in the movie.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and also, I mean, the action is much better with the way that they do it here. There's no question in my mind about that one.
Right.
So, all right. So every Friday we have a segment called Name That Movie. So, this movie originally was called Simon Says. So what I did was I made a list of 156 movies that have other titles that were the original title, or sometimes maybe.
And we're going to talk about them all today on this. No.
Or maybe it's a fake title. We will talk about some of them.
You played this game on my show before. Go ahead.
Okay. And so the idea is I'm going to tell you the original name or the fake name of the movie and tell you the year, and then you're going to tell me what movie it is. What's the real, what's the release?
You're going to tell me the fake name of a real movie, and I'm going to guess the movie that the name was. Okay, I got you.
That's correct. And you have the option of, you can ask me for the name of the director, you can ask me the name of the actor.
Oh, I got lifelines? Oh, let's do
you
it.
Got right, lifelines. You got lifelines.
Awesome. I like it.
All right. So we'll start with an easy one for you. From 2000. The original title of this movie was Last Summer I Screamed because Friday the 13th fell on Halloween.
Is this a scary movie?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, it's got to be a spoof.
I told you we're starting easy.
Okay. I had to think about it for a second. I was like, what's the name of the scary movie? Yeah.
Okay. All right. 1985, The Lunch Bunch.
Breakfast Club.
Okay. Great. Okay, this is actually a fake title. Okay, from 2011, Frostbite.
Frostbite. Who's the director?
That's going to give it away really quickly.
Oh, yeah. You said I had a lifeline.
You do. Okay, Joe Johnston.
Frostbite. Oh, is this Captain America? First Avenger?
It is Captain America: First Avenger, and you see, I chose this one for you without even knowing that we were going to talk about Captain America. We were talking about
Biggs. There you go. See, we know it.
There you go. All right, number four from 1997, The Ship of Dreams.
Is James Cameron the director of this?
Yes, he is.
It's Titanic then.
Yes.
I think it's Titanic, but let me just see if James Cameron is kicking around in there. Let me just make sure my.
Exactly. All right. And the final one, which this one I think might be a little more difficult for you, but we'll see.
Okay.
From 1993, Incident on 57th Street.
Incident on 57th Street?
Yes.
1993. Who's the director? This is probably going to be tough. Incident on 57th Street. 93.
De Palma.
I want to say Snake Eyes, but it can't be.
That's 98.
It's 98, yeah. 93. What other lifelines did I have other than director?
You can ask for names of actors. Obviously, I'm not going to give you the main actor, but I will give you
the main actor. Give me another actor.
Okay. Let's see what actor I will give you from here.
I got a blind spot with De Palma.
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo. Carlito's Way?
Yeah, very good. I'm very impressed that you got it just with John Leguizamo. Where I didn't need to give you Viggo Mortensen or Sean Penn.
My brain went John Leguizamo, De Palma. That's what I got the connection. I was like, I got to be Carlito's Way. That's the only thing I can remember him being in with him. Wow. Probably. So yeah.
That is very, very impressive.
Thank you.
Nicely done. All right, you see, it wasn't as bad as you thought it would be.
No, that was the Palm is a blind spot for me. It's funny because I've never seen all of Carlito's Way. I've seen most of Carlito's Way. I've seen Untouchables, Scarface, Snake Eyes inexplicably, but Blowout. I think I've seen. I was gonna say Blowout, but that's definitely not 1993. So yeah, that was a tough one. That was a tough one.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Excellent. So, DJ, would you like to once again tell people where they can find DJ Valentine?
You'll find me on 57th Street with John Leguizamo and Brian De Palma. Or
is there an incident? There an incident happening?
I might start an incident. Who knows? I might do a little, some Irish dancing or something. Or you can check at Simple Tweeters or at Trying to Be DJB on Twitter, or just search Simplistic Reviews. That's the podcast I'm on with Justin Blizzley and Matthew Stewart. Or check our website, simplistic.reviews.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net, or you can visit my website, movierobminute.com. So, DJ, thank you very much for joining me for this blood-curling and brain-flattering minute.
You brought me in for the brains, but not the brains I thought.
Well, DJ, just so you know, this was the most sought-after week. And
everybody proud. I apologize. Guys, yes. People, if you were trying for the spot and I effed I'm a piker compared to you guys. I apologize.
Yes. The truth is, this I thought that the week that people would want would be the was last week's. You know, I thought more people would want the jugs, but
hey. I was surprised nobody wants the dump truck. I like that was my second choice. Was going to be the in the tunnel with the dump trucks. I thought that was really going
to go. Well, there were a lot of people who wanted Jerry also. So there you go.
Oh, but, yeah, Jerry's great.
Yeah, we'll meet him soon. All right, excellent. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But thank you once again, DJ.
No problem.
And until Monday, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. How colorful. How colorful.
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.